You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, joined this week by Mike Wilner, stepping in for Gregor Chisholm, who's on vacation. Mike, thanks for pinch hitting. Always appreciate you here on the podcast.
Oh, pleasure to join you. Man, Gregor takes a lot of vacations.
Yeah, and this is a good one, I think. I think he's in Hawaii. I don't want to give away his exact whereabouts, but I believe it's a good trip before spring training, so good for him. Meanwhile, we will hold down the fort here as we continue to break down the Blue Jays roster, and this week we're getting into the bullpen a little bit, and the bullpen, I mean, I guess when you look at any bullpen, it starts from the top in that closer role, and you need that guy you can depend on, and the Blue Jays certainly have that. Roberto Osuna has turned into one of the most steady guys, and he's been so good the last couple of years, Mike, that I feel like you almost forget that this guy's 21 years old. But he's been so good, but he's pitched a lot the last couple of years. Any concerns with the Blue Jays about the fact that with the postseason a year ago, he threw 83 innings? Are they going to be careful early on to make sure that he doesn't pile up too many innings in 2017?
I don't know. I mean, I think the bigger concern might have been that he had to come out of the wild card game when his shoulder was barking, and nobody saw that coming. He had been leaned on pretty heavily over the course of the whole season, and September especially, and then he was pitching the wild card game, the win extra innings, thought you were going to get at least two from him and maybe stick with him as deep as you needed to go, but he had to come out and everyone got really scared. Francisco Liriano wound up coming in and finishing that thing off, but then he was back in the ALDS and fine, and in the ALCS and fine, and so you know, you kind of wonder what that scare was and what's going on, but with an off season of rest, one would think he should be fine. He was a starter coming up. He's already had Tommy John surgery, and so I don't think there are really any legitimate concerns about workload for him. I think that he has just kind of settled beautifully into this role at the back of the bullpen, and he's the most prolific closer, young closer in history. He has a major league record for most saves before the age of 22, and one hopes that with his arsenal and his competitiveness, he'll be able to keep racking them up.
Yeah, and he seems to really fit the mold as everything that you want to see in a closer. He kind of checks all those boxes. Now, after Osuna, things get a little more murky for this Blue Jays bullpen. It's a group that did a nice job in 2016, but when you look at those names, you wonder if they can repeat it. And one of the guys out there is obviously Jason Grilli, who's 40 years old. He's a guy who's had ups and downs in his career. Right when you want to count him out, he has a tremendous run, and he had one of those with the Blue Jays a year ago. I mean, is he going to be a guy the Blue Jays can depend upon in an eighth-inning role?
You'd think so. I mean, his history shows that he is. Every time, you know, I guess you look back at, I don't know, what, the last 3, 4, 5 years, he's been pretty fantastic with the exception of the time that he was hurt. He had the Achilles thing when he was with the Braves, and it led him to a terrible April and May last year while he was still sort of recovering from it. But he's been as dependable as it gets over the course of the last few years. So I think that's the plan. Now, he kind of got roughed up in September, but he was phenomenal in the postseason and has never allowed a run in his postseason career. So, yeah, he's a guy that they're absolutely counting on to play in that setup role and to be as good as he was last year.
Maybe the feel-good story of this Blue Jays bullpen in 2016 was Joe Biagini. Rule 5 pick, had never pitched above Double-A, but obviously when you take a guy in the Rule 5 draft, he has to spend the whole season up with the big league club. And for a lot of teams, that ends up being a guy that they kind of stash, and he ends up just pitching in blowouts, whether they're a team's ahead or behind. Biagini was not that. He was a guy that ended up being a huge part of this bullpen, ended up throwing 67 2/3 innings, and showed that he was ready to pitch in the big leagues. Maybe so much so that the Blue Jays went out and got another reliever in the Rule 5 draft this winter. But Joe Biagini, what stood out the most to you about him last year, Mike? Going, you know, basically going from Double A to the majors and just stepping right in for this for the staff and being such a big deal.
You know, it was his poise out on the mound and his command and his stuff. They thought when they picked him in the Rule 5 draft that his stuff would play up. And it did. The fastball got to the mid-90s and a terrific curveball as well. And he was unflappable out there. You know, they started him off in low-leverage situations, but he earned his way into big spots. And they would drop him in the seventh inning of one-run games, and then it was the eighth inning of one-run games, and then, you know, tie games late and extra innings. And he met pretty much every challenge. He didn't give up a home run until September. And in a season where the bullpen was definitely in flux, he was as consistent as anybody except for Asuna. So, you know, he really earned his spot. And the talk all year had been, we'll keep him in the bullpen now, but he's been a starter his whole life, and next year we'll send him down, and he'll spend the year in AAA developing as a starter that we can use in the future and give us a little bit of starting pitching depth, said the Blue Jays. But the year he had and the offseason the way it went, there's almost no chance that he's not a major, major member of the big league bullpen again this year.
He was such a good story last year that I was hosting the Rule 5 coverage for MLB.com this winter, and all the talk leading up to the Rule 5 draft was, all right, who's going to be this year's Joe Biagini? That's what everybody was kind of looking for. He was every year there's a guy that kind of gives people hope for the Rule 5 draft and what you can find in it, and he was certainly the one from a year ago. And the Blue Jays went out and they picked Glenn Sparkman in this year's Rule 5 draft. Another guy's never pitched above Double A. He came back from Tommy John surgery last year, so we'll see if he can be as effective as Biagini was. Now, when you look at this bullpen, Mike, the one guy that's clearly missing was Brett Cecil, and he's a guy the Blue Jays wanted to bring back, and they gave an offer to, but he ended up going elsewhere. How do they replace Brett Cecil out there in the pen?
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, and I think it's easy to get caught up on how do you replace Brett Cecil because he remains left-handed, and you can kind of get lost looking for a lefty and feeling that you need to have someone who throws with his left arm just for the sake of the fact that, you know, he throws with his left arm and nothing else. And you know, the Blue Jays have Matt Dermody, who pitched at four levels last year, started in A-ball and made it all the way up to the big leagues. And I don't think it was in his major league debut, I can't remember, but he struck out David Ortiz in one of his early September outings. He's a guy who is definitely going to be in the mix to be that bullpen lefty. They have Chad Jurado, who's more of a, I guess, I don't take this as an insulting term, but he's more of a slot baller, a guy who's mid-80s and uses the breaking stuff to really destroy left-handed hitters. That's what he's done in the minor leagues. Aaron Loop has had his challenges in the major leagues, but he has had years where he's been very close to unhittable, and he's obviously going to get the first shot to have that job. And the Blue Jays brought in guys like Jeff Beliveau, who used to pitch for the Rays, T.J. House, who was an Indian, and Brett Oberholzer, who was a former Houston Astro, to all go after this lefty relief job. But I think, for me anyway, it's more important to have relievers who can get people out, regardless of which side they throw from. And the Jays have a group of four youngsters, all of whom are right-handed, but Bo Schultz, Ryan Tepera, who have had significant success in very short spurts in the major leagues, as well as Chris Smith, who can give them a shot at being really good out of the bullpen. And, you know, they're young, but I think, Danny Barnes is the other one. And Danny Barnes was, if you look at his minor league numbers last year, they jump off the page unbelievable. And as a righty, he dominated left-handed hitters. So out of those four guys, Schultz, Tepera, Barnes, Smith, I think a couple of them are going to break through. They've all got big arms, and they've all had a lot of success underneath. So I'm expecting them to do something, not just because, you know, they're right-handed, should they be dismissed as part of that potential solution. And there's also Gavin Floyd, who the Blue Jays have brought back on a minor league deal. He blew his shoulder out in the middle of last season, but up to that point, he had been terrific out of the bullpen, and again, he was a right-hander who dominated left-handers. So, you know, you don't want to get too tunnel vision-y about you have to have a lefty, you have to have a lefty, no matter how good he is, especially if you have right-handed relievers who can get lefties out.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think more and more teams are kind of going with that philosophy. It used to be you had to have that lefty. Now you just have to have somebody who can get those guys out. Whether or not he's a lefty is less important. One more thing I wanted to get your thoughts on here on the podcast, Mike, is the Blue Jays have added some depth as far as the catching ranks go. Obviously, they have Russell Martin there locked in as your starting catcher. But Juan Graterol, they claimed him from the Angels. He's a guy that's only really had a handful of major league games, made his debut last year. But what are the Blue Jays hoping he kind of adds to that catching equation?
I think when they claimed him, they were hoping that he would give them some competition for the backup catcher's job with A.J. Jimenez, who's their own guy in the minors. But then after Graterol, they signed Jared Saltalamacchia. And Saltalamacchia is very, very likely to wind up being the backup catcher. So Graterol goes to AAA and gives them some depth in Buffalo. And he's been a fine minor league catcher. You know, he's young. He's only 27 years old. He's hit 270 in the minors with a 320 on base, which is totally acceptable. And he's thrown runners out at a rate better than the league average. So, you know, he's okay, and maybe there's more in there because a lot of catchers hit late. And again, at only 27 years old, I think when you find that on waivers, a guy with options, then that's somebody you grab and you stash, and there's some depth for your system.
All right, this has been MLB.com Extras, our Blue Jays edition. Thanks again to Mike Wilner for filling in for Gregor Chisholm this week. Tune in again next week. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Orioles reporter, Brittany Giroli. Brittany, we're continuing to break down the Orioles roster heading into 2017, and it's all about the outfield this week on the podcast, and that at times may include the newest Baltimore Oriole, or newest old Baltimore Oriole, and that is Mark Trumbo. I'm sure the Orioles would prefer him to be at the DH spot for most of the time, but he's a guy that played some outfield for them last year. How big was it in general? It's been a little bit now, but he still hasn't been officially introduced. But how big a get was it for the Orioles to bring back Mark Trumbo on the type of contract that they did?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, it really kind of sets up their lineup. When you look at how good the Orioles were last year, a big part of that was the bullpen and their lineup. And Mark Trumbo led the majors in home runs, obviously had a career year, was an all-star. I think having him back really essentially gets the Orioles the same team. And then the hope, of course, that they're going to be a little bit better as a rotation. So it gives them a lot more wiggle room because you know that offense, once again, is going to score a lot of runs.
And preferably a DH because they'd like to prevent runs, which is something that Mark Trumbo struggles to do when he's playing in the outfield. It's been well documented, his metric struggles as far as playing in the outfield. They have left field, it's going to be Hyun-Soo Kim, center field Adam Jones, obviously. And then right field, Seth Smith, who was added for just that reason to help out the defense. So let's start there with Seth Smith in right field. He's a veteran guy. This is a veteran team. Do you expect him to fit right in with this roster?
Yeah. It's a pretty easy clubhouse, and I'm glad you brought him up because that was why they went out and got him. And now Trumbo really doesn't have to play the outfield, or he can start a game and be removed late in the game as for a defensive replacement. So there's a lot of different things they can do now, having that addition of Seth Smith. But, yeah, I don't expect any issues in terms of him fitting in. They really liked his at-bats. They liked the fact that he's a good on-base percentage guy. They like the speed and the defense. And he's a guy that they've admired for a while from the opposing dugout. So I expect him to be a nice addition for them.
And when they acquired Seth Smith, I think the thought process was, well, they probably won't bring in Trumbo or bring Trumbo back, but then the price tag drops, and And now it's really the best of both worlds with both of those guys on the roster. I mentioned Kim in left field, and what a whirlwind year it's been for this guy. Obviously, coming over from Korea, and he had about as bad a spring training as maybe anyone has ever had, and then refused to go down to the minor leagues. And then once the season started and he got his opportunity, hey, he hit at the major league level. And I don't know if I've seen anybody go as quickly from villain to fan favorite as Hyun-Soo Kim did last year with the Orioles.
I know. It was remarkable. And you know, you can't say you saw it coming because nobody saw it coming. But it was really cool. It was really cool for a guy like him to be able to contribute the way that he did. And I think that they're expecting that some of those struggles that he had in spring training obviously are going to be removed. So having a guy like Kim, adding that kind of addition, I think he really saw the guy that they thought that they were going to get. It just took a little time. You know, it took time for him to kind of endear himself, and rightfully so. He had to perform. And I think Orioles fans now, as you mentioned, love the guy. He had such a big home run for them in Toronto earlier towards the end of the season that having him back in the second year of his contract, I think really people are really excited to see what he can do and see how he adjusts, because the league made adjustments and Kim was still able to be successful. I think that he could really surprise some people this year.
He's a guy that, if I remember correctly, Brittany, when he was introduced for the home opener at Camden Yards, he was booed, wasn't he?
He was. Yes, he was.
And he's come a long way for sure. So he should be out there in left field. And then Adam Jones in center field, as always, you know, the heart and soul of this team. Is there any concern with the Orioles that as Adam Jones gets a little older, 31 years old now, he may lose that step in center field and have to be moved to a corner at some point? I mean, we haven't seen that yet. He still plays a very good center right now.
Yeah, I haven't heard any talk of that yet, but I do think that part of the reason why he had so many leg issues the last couple of years, why he's been so beat up, is he's been trying to cover so much more ground. That's why getting a guy like Seth Smith really helps take some of the pressure off Adam Jones, having, you know, legitimate defensive outfielders around him so he doesn't have to cover so much territory, should help him stay healthier, should avoid him having to run basically all over creation to try and chase down these balls because he's not sure the other guys are going to get it. So I haven't heard anything about, you know, him breaking down. I've seen some of the statistics that show maybe he's not as great of a center fielder as he once was, but I think when you look at Adam Jones right now, he's still got some good years left in him.
And running the show out there in the outfield, certainly there's some value there, too, as a veteran guy that's kind of seen it all out there in the outfield. As far as the bench goes, obviously Mark Trumbo, we mentioned, is a guy who can play in the outfield in a pinch. You have Joey Rickard, who last year started off so hot and then obviously he stayed on the roster with the Rule 5 draft factor. But what are the expectations now? Because reality seemed to set in as the season went along in 2016.
Sure, it did. And, you know, the expectations are, I think, pretty good when you look at a guy like that, and certainly he showed flashes of what he's capable of doing. But I think the Orioles outfield overall is in a better spot than they were a year ago. And I think that they're going to have to rely less on just a guy like Adam Jones. And I think if everybody is able to kind of bring what they bring, whether that's defense or offense, I think that Buck Showalter is going to do a good job in terms of managing guys, platooning guys, kind of setting them up to succeed, because that was a big issue with them last year, was that outfield defense. And I think bringing back Trumbo and adding a guy like Seth Smith, you really got the best of both worlds there.
So what are some other – who are the other players that are kind of on the way, Brittany, beyond the players we've talked about? That maybe if they wow in spring training, they have a chance or at least put themselves on the map here heading into 2017.
You know, Tim, there's not a whole lot in terms of outfield prospects. I mean, there's guys that they've kind of tried on the outfield to see, experiment, see how it would go a little bit. But there's not really anybody who you're like, okay, this guy could be the next guy up. There's a reason there's a lot of non-roster older type of outfielders that they're going to have in camp. There's not really that next line of defense, especially when you look at position players in their minor league system. So that's why they had to go out and get a guy like Seth Smith. And they do hope, though, and, you know, we didn't talk about him at all. I almost forgot. But a kid like Joey Rickard, who was the Rule 5 pick last year, who was sensational. I think he's not really a prospect per se because he was a Rule 5 pick, but he's a guy who they, I think, can kind of rely on a little bit. So beyond the guys that we talked about, Joey Rickard, I think they're excited to see a little bit more of and see what he can contribute as well.
And that's really, I think, the next step as far as this organization goes is you got to continue to restock that system because there aren't a lot of players on the way and certainly not in the outfield. So that's the next step to continuing the success the Orioles have had. But certainly Seth Smith is going to help out in that outfield. They should be better at keeping other teams off the board. And we mentioned it, Mark Trumbo will be back in the middle of that lineup. Great stuff as always, Brittany. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Orioles edition. For Brittany Giroli, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here along with Brian Hoke. He's our MLB.com Yankees reporter. And, Brian, we are talking about the outfield this week on the podcast as we get closer to spring training. We'll also touch on the World Baseball Classic and which Yankees are in and which Yankees are out of that. And, obviously, fans have two viewpoints of that. One, you'd like your guy just to be getting ready for the season, but you also love to see your guys in that World Baseball Classic. It makes it a little more exciting. But let's start with the outfield, and it's an outfield that, once again, it appears will have Brett Gardner in left field to start the season. We've made it through another year of rumors swirling around Brett Gardner, and he is back again. And you know what? Every time he goes through these off seasons with the trade rumors swirling, he gets to work in spring training, and he puts in another solid season on the field for the Yankees.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Gardner is that while they didn't make any secret of the fact that he was available, they obviously wanted to upgrade the starting pitching if they could. It was going to take a lot to pry Brett Gardner away from the Yankees just because of the value he has. He's a plus defender, just won his first Gold Glove, hits at the top of the lineup, has speed. He's a very consistent player, always stays on the field, good in the clubhouse. So for a lot of reasons, Brett Gardner is an asset to the Yankees. I think that given his contract situation, it's no surprise that teams were interested in him, but like I said, it was going to take a lot to take him away from the Yankees. And at some point this offseason, Brian Cashman decided they'd be better off just keeping Brett Gardner and going forward with what they have.
So it'll be Gardner in left and Jacoby Ellsbury in center field once again. And Ellsbury was just looking at the numbers before the podcast in his time with the Yankees, Brian. And I guess you have to say overall, considering the contract they gave him, it's been a disappointing time. At times he's been great, and he's been that guy that we saw at times with the Red Sox. But really the story of Ellsbury's career is being unable to, I guess, stay fully healthy so that he can play up to so much potential that he has. So what's the viewpoint heading into 2017 for the Yankees and Ellsbury?
Look, he still plays a decent center field, but I think that dollar amount haunts him. I think that obviously he's one of the highest paid players on this roster. You're expecting, if not an MVP caliber performance, an all-star caliber performance, and the Yankees really just haven't gotten that a whole lot. So Alan Cockrell, the hitting coach, was talking last week about Ellsbury a little bit. It's interesting. Last year he had so many catcher's interferences. It was historic. We'd never seen anything like it, and it was kind of funny. We'd laugh about it every time it happens. But Cockrell brings up the idea that maybe that's part of the problem for him. Maybe he's starting his swing too late. Maybe he's a little defensive. Maybe he's gotten a little too comfortable in the box, and that's why he keeps clipping the catcher's glove. They've looked at tape of when he was really good in Boston and compared it to with the Yankees, and they've showed that to Ellsbury. It's not anything particularly groundbreaking. They tried it during the season last year, but it's tough to make those kind of adjustments. But I think you're going to see Ellsbury working on his timing a little bit. You're going to see some slight changes. I'm not sure if the naked eye will be able to pick it up in spring training, but they are definitely trying to get more out of Jacoby Ellsbury this year. And given their investment, I'm not surprised at all.
And as he loses a step as he gets later in his career, you'd love to see some of those power numbers come back. I mean, here's a guy who was a 30-30 guy that one year in Boston where he almost won the MVP award. But that power has really gone away, and maybe that's part of what you're talking about if he's late on the ball and he's not as aggressive as he once was.
It could be. I still don't think the Yankees are counting on Ellsbury to be a 30-homer guy. I think that was more of an outlier if you look at his whole career. But if he can get on base, if he can steal some bases, become a presence, I mean, they love when Ellsbury and Gardner are getting in pitchers' heads and they're kind of pests on the base pass. But they have to get on base for that to really work. And Gardner's been better at it at times than Ellsbury. Ellsbury obviously has to stay healthy. That's been an issue too. But, yeah, clearly, given the investment in him, the dollar amount, there's still a lot of time left on that contract. The Yankees have to hope that Jacoby Ellsbury has more to show.
And then when you look to right field, obviously it's a big chance here for Aaron Judge to step in and kind of make that position his. How important is spring training for him? And if he does really struggle early on, who do the Yankees turn to kind of help out and maybe fill in that spot?
Yeah, I think it's a huge opportunity for him. You know, even Hal Steinbrenner has talked about hoping that Judge can step up and take advantage of the opportunity. So clearly you can tell which way the Yankees are hoping things go. They saw Gary Sanchez come up. He was a force in the last 2 months of last season. They hope that Judge can be that kind of guy. But, you know, time will tell. He struck out a ton, and I don't expect him to strike out in 50% of his plate appearances for the rest of his career. If he does, it's going to be pretty tough to stick around. But I think that given his body type, you know, he's a tall, big strike zone. There's a lot of moving parts. There is an adjustment process, and that kind of tracks his entire career. Every time he's gone to a new level, double A, triple A, the majors, there's been a period of struggling followed by an adjustment, and we just haven't seen the major league adjustment yet. So I think that the more reps he gets this spring training, last year he was in big league camp, but you knew he wasn't really a contender to make the team. This year, the opportunity is there. Let's see if he steps up and takes it. If not, I think the Yankees will go with Aaron Hicks. Hicks was a disappointment his first year after coming over from the Twins, but showed some good things when he got to play every day, and I think that could be big for him. It is always tough for a young player to fit into a part-time fourth outfielder role, that kind of thing. If he gets the reps, the talent is definitely there. We've seen flashes of it, the power, the contact hitting, obviously the arm from the outfield. I mean, there's a lot of good things that Aaron Hicks can do. I think he just needs a chance to get that rhythm and show it on a regular basis. And if he does, I think he'll be a pretty decent player for them. But Aaron Judge has a lot to say about that.
Mason Williams also on the 40-man roster. Tyler Austin can play a little bit of right field. I guess Rob Refsnyder, we've talked about maybe playing outfield as well as his ability to play around the infield. So they have other pieces as well that can kind of step in there. When you look at a breakdown of a 25-man roster, though, is Mason Williams going to be a guy that has to fight for his spot?
Yeah, it's hard to see a scenario where Williams breaks camp with the team without an injury. But, you know, anything could really happen. The one good thing that Williams has in his favor is that he can play all three outfield positions. So they could put him pretty much anywhere. He's got that versatility. But that being said, you've got Jacoby Ellsbury, who can play center field, and Brett Gardner can play left and center. So Hicks can play all three. So there's going to be a crowded competition. I think that as far as right field goes, it's going to be between Hicks and Judge. And then if Gardner and Ellsbury get through the spring healthy, then Mason Williams will be in AAA and be one of those first guys who gets called up on the shuttle.
All right, so that's a look around the outfield for this team. World Baseball Classic quickly approaching. It'll be played out during spring training, Brian, and the Yankees will have some players involved and some players that you thought maybe would be involved that aren't. One of those is Masahiro Tanaka, who's going to skip the World Baseball Classic, and I would think for the most part the Yankees and fans thrilled about that because obviously Tanaka still dealing with the, I don't want to call it a ticking time bomb in the elbow, but there's always going to be those concerns. So the least games you need him to pitch for someone else, the better.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, he doesn't complain about the injury anymore, and I feel like it's something we just talk about a whole lot. But look, he has a partially torn ulnar collateral ligament. That really doesn't heal. What you can do is manage it, and he's done a great job of doing that, but it's not going to just heal on its own without surgery. So I think that you look at the fact that he threw 199 and two-thirds innings last year. He had a terrific year. I don't think there are those people out there are saying, oh, go get the surgery anymore. I think that he has proven he can adapt and adjust as long as he can keep everything together there. But, yeah, sure, there's always the chance of a blowout. And so I think that limiting that, look, he's got a lot of factors here, too. I think the travel would have been tough for him to have to go back to Japan from Tampa in the middle of spring training. I think that the fact that he can opt out after this season, so it's technically a contract year for him, all those factor in. Plus, then you talk about the wear and tear on that right arm, and I think that it was probably a no-brainer for Tanaka to sit this one out. He's done it twice before. But I think they'll get by without him. And he's going to keep his focus on opening day, April 2nd, for the Yankees.
So who is going to be involved in the World Baseball Classic for the Pinstripers?
Right. Well, Dellin Betances has committed to the Dominican Republic, and it's possible he could be joined on that roster by Gary Sanchez. That's not official yet, but that is definitely on the table. So I think that the Yankees would probably prefer if Sanchez was in camp with their pitchers, but I think that the appeal of playing for the DR might be too great for him, and you can't blame him for that. And Didi Gregorius is going to play for the Netherlands, so he'll be on that star-studded Dutch roster. And if you're going to see these guys in Yankee spring training, you want to come down and get your photos and autographs, you better do it a little early because they're going to be busy a lot of the month.
All right, great stuff as always, Brian. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Yankees edition. For Brian Hoke, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our Rays reporter Bill Chastain as we're going to look inside the bullpen of the Rays heading into 2017 on the podcast this week. But, Bill, before we get to that, the Rays making a big trade over the last week. Logan Forsyth is headed out west to the Dodgers. Jose DeLeon joins the Rays. So a second baseman that's been such a big part of this team the last couple of years goes away. Evan Longoria didn't seem to be thrilled with it, but Jose DeLeon, a young right-handed pitcher who seems ready for the big leagues. He made his debut for the Dodgers in 2016. When you look at this trade, they just traded starting pitching away. Now they get some back in a separate deal. But what does losing Logan Forsyth mean for the 2017 edition of the Rays?
Well, you're losing a quality at bat in the lineup. I mean, he was one of the tougher outs. But on the other hand, you're getting back a pitcher that you know, it looks like could be a mainstay in the rotation, and they'll control him for several years. So that's kind of just how they do business. You know, you graduate from Rays University once you start making a lot of money, but you know, they've got DeLeon, and looks like, you know, he's got legitimate promise. And you know, Eric Neander of the Rays said that he didn't, you know, they didn't go into the offseason looking to trade Forsyth, but this guy was just the guy who was on their radar, you know, DeLeon, and when he was available, you know, they pulled the trigger on the deal.
Yeah, and it almost the Rays benefit maybe from what the Twins couldn't get done, because the Dodgers for so long seemed like Brian Dozier was going to be the guy as far as getting a second baseman. But the Twins wanted more than just DeLeon. They wanted somebody else as well. The Dodgers didn't want to do that, so instead they turned to the Rays. So they get more young pitching. So who's going to play second base for the Rays? Is Nick Franklin the guy, or is there going to be a competition?
I think there's going to be a competition, and if you were handicapping it, I would think the leader in the clubhouse would be Franklin, just because the way they ended the season. But you know, don't count out Tim Beckham. He's still got some talent, and you know, I would love to see what he could do if he got to play every day. And then also Daniel Robertson, you know, he could end up being your, you know, utility guy in the infield. So who knows, you know, how it's going to shake down. But I do think there definitely will be competition in the spring.
All right, let's move on to the bullpen. And you talk about trades and rumors, and there's certainly been rumors around Alex Colomé as well this offseason. So far, the Rays have held on to their closer from 2016, who really took over that role, obviously, when Brad Boxberger went down, and Colomé embraced it and looked every bit as good a closer as, you know, as far as consistency and everything. He may not be that absolute dominant guy, but you need a dependable guy in the ninth inning. Alex Colomé was that for the Rays.
Yeah, he didn't seem rattled to come in and pitch the ninth. In fact, he seemed to come in and be just embrace the moment. So I think he has the makeup to continue being a closer, whether that's with the Rays or somebody else, who knows. I do think we're going to get a good look at Ryan Stanek in the spring. He had a good season last year. You know, hard thrower, changed over from a starter to the bullpen. So, you know, right now I think they've got a good situation because they're building a bullpen from the top down. You know, you've got Boxberger and you've got Colomé at the back end, and then, you know, it's a lot easier to find the guys to bridge them.
And obviously Boxberger didn't put together, once healthy, the season that he wanted to a year ago, the ERA nearly five. But he had to deal with a lot of stuff there. Is there confidence that he's going to be back to what he was in the past, which was a guy that was capable of closing for this team?
Well, I think the feeling is that he will be back. Everything last year to him last year, I think all of his fortunes were tied to his health, and it was spotty. You know, even when he came back the first time, he re-injured himself in his first outing. So he missed a lot of time, and I think it's really hard to get into a good groove when you're in that situation.
The Rays have also added some depth to that bullpen recently. Sean Tolleson has been signed, right-hander. This is a guy, Bill, that saved 35 games for the Rangers just in 2015, not that long ago, but had all kinds of troubles last year. Seems like a perfect signing for the Rays, though. It's going to be one of those, you know, low risk, but the possibility of high rewards, and a guy who's pitched in those high leverage situations that won't be depended upon to do it necessarily for the Rays. He could be that guy that you see in the seventh inning. Seems like a perfect fit and a good signing at this point in the offseason.
Yeah, and you know what? The Rays, if there's one thing they seem to have had a magical touch on, from, like 2006 on, has been bringing in these guys who had done well, and then they kind of get another, they kind of falter, and then bring them into the Rays, and they kind of reclaim their careers. So it's funny, you almost bet on a guy like that once they go to the Rays, just given the history of them picking up veteran relievers and what's happened to them.
And then you look through the rest of the guys as far as the bullpen goes. You have Xavier Cedeño, Danny Farquhar, Eni Romero. Erasmo Ramirez was good a year ago. There's a lot of names there. How do those guys kind of – what roles do those guys fit into at this point? I know everything can change in spring training once they're out there throwing. But are there – in your mind, do the Rays kind of have a feeling of where those guys will fit, or is it just going to be open spring training and see who kind of rises to the top?
Of that group, I would say Xavier Cedeño is probably the – one guy who's kind of your left-handed specialist, to go after left-handed batters. Otherwise, I think it's all hands on deck, filling in the innings. And, some of them will start the season in the minor leagues, some will start in the major leagues, and they'll shuffle back and forth all year based on how much work the bullpen's getting. So they want to, have as many guys as they can that are fluid and can go back and forth between the minors and the majors and give them the innings they need.
I mentioned Erasmo Ramirez, and he's been the guy in the past that could be that swing guy, Bill, that can start in a pinch if needed as well. Is that going to be his role going forward? Is that what the Rays think is his best spot, to be a guy that you could keep stretched out a little bit because he can make that spot start?
I don't know if that would be him this year, or that might fall to someone like Chase Whitley. But Erasmo certainly did it pretty well. He was kind of the tail of two seasons last year, started off really hot and then kind of faltered. But that's two pretty good guesses right there, Erasmo or Chase Whitley.
And then you mentioned one youngster in Ryan Stanek that could get a look here in spring training and see, and maybe potentially could be a high-leverage guy eventually. Another young guy in the system, Jamie Schultz. How much of a look does he get in spring training?
Well, he opened some eyes last year, and, I don't think they've really ruled out him being a starter yet, so probably more than likely he would start the season at Durham, in the rotation until he proved otherwise. But, you've seen a lot of guys, even guys who became starters in the major leagues, come up as relievers and then move back into that role. He's got good composure. He's got a good fastball. He seems to know what he's doing out there. So I think if you're going to watch the Rays this spring, two really interesting guys to take a look at are Stanek and Schultz.
Finally, adding De Leon into the equation as far as rotation goes, Bill, that means they kind of look like they have six starters again. So whoever doesn't get a spot in that rotation from that group, does that guy end up in the bullpen, or is there a guy that with options that ends up in AAA? Obviously, De Leon has options, but I feel like they'd prefer it if he could win a spot in the rotation.
Well, all of those possibilities happen. The big qualifier in the whole thing is who's healthy at the end of spring training, and usually these things have a way of working themselves out. Somebody tweaks a muscle here or there, and you end up having to use this guy or that guy. It's pretty rare to come out of spring training squeaky clean on the health. So if they have to do it, I think they've got the guys there who they've got options, and they can send them down to protect them. But I, you know, usually, again, these things have a way of working themselves out.
Great stuff as always, Bill. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Rays edition. For Bill Chastain, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week.
Hey, everyone. Welcome into a Red Sox edition of MLB.com Extras. Tim McMaster here, joined by Ian Brown, our Red Sox reporter. And, Ian, we're going to get into the Red Sox catching situation as we get ready for spring training, but some other stuff going on as well as we do the podcast this week. Obviously, over the weekend, a lot of Red Sox and a lot of fans were down in Connecticut for the winter weekend, which has become a cool January tradition as fans get excited for the upcoming baseball season. But the news just today, as we record this podcast, David Ortiz will have his number retired June 23rd. Number 34 will officially be retired. It's the 11th number that the Boston Red Sox have retired. And it's amazing, Ian, growing up and going to Fenway Park as a kid, I remember there always being the numbers were set out there in right field, and yeah, it always had the feeling that it was something that was just never going to change. You had those set numbers. But in recent years, suddenly the Red Sox are seemingly catching up with the Yankees with 11 retired numbers now. That obviously goes along with the success the team's had, and also connecting with the good teams of the 80s as well. But David Ortiz, if any player didn't have to wait to have his number retired by the Red Sox, it's David Ortiz.
Yeah, you know, it's the next natural thing. Yeah, I think it surprised some people that they're doing it so quickly because, you know, the other guys, they are always waiting until the players got in the Hall of Fame. And with David Ortiz, they're retiring his number, you know, just one season after he's done playing. So, you know, I think it's fitting, though, because just there's been nobody else like David Ortiz in Red Sox history. Given his magnitude and what he's done for the team, you know, on the field, off the field, in the community, it'll be a fun day at Fenway to see his number go up there next to, I'm assuming it'll go right up next to Pedro's.
Yeah, and for a team that obviously didn't win a World Series title for 86 years, for a guy to retire with three rings is kind of amazing, and it shows what he's meant to this franchise, certainly. If I'm correct, for the time from June 23rd until, assuming David Ortiz does get into the Hall of Fame in either 5 or 6 or 7 years from now, it'll be just him and Pesky will be the only ones that aren't Hall of Famers, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everybody else up there has been to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, you wonder if that might loosen up over the years or if they're going to stick with that Hall of Fame policy. You know, you look at a team like the Yankees, who I know, you know, they've retired quite a few numbers of guys. You know, Bernie Williams comes to mind. I think, you know, guys who haven't gone to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, certainly. Jorge Posada. Yeah, there's guys in the mix, certainly, with the Yankees. The Red Sox have always had that real high standard, which I think is great. I think that's the way it should be. As far as the weekend goes, you got to see some players put on their Red Sox jerseys for the first time. The new guys, Sale and Thornburg and Moreland, that's pretty cool. Other news, Andrew Benintendi, I guess he's bulking up. Is this a good thing? I mean, obviously he thinks it's a good thing, but when you see how dynamic a player he is there a thought that having a little extra weight on him will be a benefit?
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, I was 2 feet away from the guy a few days ago, and it's not like you're like, oh, wow, this guy's huge.
He's still 5'8", right?
Yeah, he's still 5'8", and you know, he said he's at a lifetime high of 185 pounds. You know, a lot of people wish they had that problem. He said he's been eating all winter, just trying to put on some weight, and obviously lifting a lot too. And you know, it helps. They, you know, be good because, you know, it can help them a little bit from a from a power standpoint. And you know, I think that a little weight will be good on him. And I think that he'll still be he'll still have some agility and some speed. They just hope it doesn't take that away. That's always the fine line when guys try to put on weight, but. Yeah, I think, it looks like he's put it on in the right way.
Yeah, and I guess that extra weight can help you get through 162 games as well. Drew Pomerantz has avoided arbitration, and he seems like he says he's healthy, he's ready to go. Obviously, that's good news after he battled the arm problems late in 2016. Just talk about the expectations for Pomerantz now that he's reached an agreement and they won't have to worry about arbitration.
Yeah, he's the one guy you really don't know quite what to expect going into the year. You know, he was an all-star last year, obviously, in the first half of San Diego. And then after the trade, he just didn't pitch that great for the Red Sox. Kind of mediocre, kind of blah. You know, usually five, maybe six innings, three, four, five runs. not great command. So was it fatigue? Was it this elbow problem that he had that they're just now, they diagnosed and they gave him a shot, a stem cell treatment, kind of experimental treatment after the season. So you're kind of holding your breath a little bit. Is this going to work? Is this elbow going to be better? Or is it something that you're going to have to worry about? So I think that's going to be a guy that a lot of eyes are going to be on him going into the spring, especially they gave up a pretty substantial prospect to get him and Anderson Espinosa.
And obviously that became controversial with the news that came out of San Diego as far as covering up information. And you hope that the problem with Pomerantz in 2016 wasn't the fact that he switched to the American League and went from Petco Park to Fenway Park, because those two things aren't changing. Hopefully it's more that the arm is a little tired and he's going to be better than he was late in 2016. All right, let's move on to the catchers. And as far as depth behind the plate, I don't think there's any team in baseball that can boast what the Red Sox kind of have heading into spring training. And I guess that's a good problem to have. You have Sandy Leon, Christian Vasquez, and Blake Swihart. Now, for a couple of years now, we've kind of been waiting for either Christian Vasquez or Swihart to become the guy behind the plate. Swihart got the start last year on opening day, but then by the end of 2016, suddenly Leon becomes the guy that was getting the starts and really had that unbelievable run. So if you're handicapping this situation heading into spring training, are all those guys kind of have a clean slate here as far as battling it out for two spots on the big league roster?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, probably they say Sandy Leon, maybe he's a slight favorite because he was the guy last year, but he also, his offense kind of quieted down. But it is funny the way it's broken down, because you look at it, 2015, Vasquez came into camp as a starting catcher, and Swihart was sort of the prospect at that time. And then it wasn't until Vasquez, tore his elbow that spring, and then they got Sandy Leon, and then Blake Swihart's timetable was accelerated. And then you look at last year, going into the season, Swihart was the starting catcher, and they kind of gave up on that just a couple weeks into the season, and suddenly Christian Vasquez was healthy again. And then when Swihart got hurt, then Sandy Leon went from kind of completely off the radar that he resurfaced and he took over the job. And now this year you still have all three guys in the mix, and you don't know quite how it's going to play out. All three of them are healthy right now. And, Blake Swihart to me is the real intriguing guy. He says, he's kind of getting sick of being asked about his ankle. He said, I'm fine. I saw him a few days ago, and, before he even gets the sense of that, he's like, yeah, healthy. So he just wants to have a fair shake to go for that job. But you look at it, and Vasquez is out of minor league options, so they can't send him down. And Swihart still has options, so you wonder, do they send him down just to kind of preserve the catching depth? So that's why I think it's a really important spring for Swihart. Above all three of these guys, he's the one I think who really has to show what he can do if he wants to win that job at the start of the season.
And what makes it intriguing is that they're all different, Ian. You have Christian Vasquez, who is so good defensively. He's got the rocket arm. He works well with the pitchers, with everything about the framing. You have Swihart, who I guess hasn't really shown it yet, but when you think about ceiling, he has the best bat in the group. And then Leon is maybe the mixture of the two. That it's almost what direction the Red Sox want to go as well, because if you just want that defense behind the plate, Vasquez is a clear guy, right, as far as the best defender?
Yeah, exactly. He's got the best arm, and he handles the pitchers well. But this is obviously this is the year we have to stop talking about him, and he actually has to do it. Because, like I said, he's out of options. So last year, they were able to stash him back in Pawtucket for a few months. They can't do that this year. So it's kind of a put up or shut up time for Christian. And it's kind of almost time to really make up a decision, because I feel like we've been talking about this for a couple years now, who's the Red Sox catcher of the future. And I really don't feel like we're any closer to answering it than we were 2 years ago. But I think we have to find out.
And you mentioned how long we've been talking about it. Are you ready, Ian, to write about it every other day for the next?
Sure. Yeah,
basically from mid-February through April, I think, as far as things that you have to be keeping an eye on down in Fort Myers, that's going to be the one on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, we'll have I think it's going to be a good spring training for stories, because you'll have that, the catching angle. You'll have the third base thing with Sandoval. And, I think you should have some competition in the starting rotation with Pomerantz and Rodriguez and Steven Wright kind of in a three-way battle for the last two spots there. So, it's always good. Spring training always go by faster when you have you know, some newsier things to write about.
All right, it'll be a lot of fun, and it's quickly approaching as we are almost into February. Spring training will be here before you know it. Great stuff, Ian. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Red Sox edition. For Ian Brown, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.